Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Everything, jobs, population, they all affect those two things, supply and demand. If you can interpret a market based on supply and demand, then you know where the future growth is going to be.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're chatting with Jeremy Shepherd from Empower Wealth, who has created an algorithm determining where the market will grow in the future. Merging computer programming with property, follow the ups and downs of Shepherd's journey from tenants creating $13,000 worth in damage to simply taking his eye off the ball. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. Working for a company that provides professional advice for investors on how to build a wealthier future, Shepherd describes himself as a data geek.
I'm the director of research at Empower Wealth. So what that means is I'm the guy that's buried in data every week looking for capital growth hotspots that suit our clients' budgets. That's pretty much it, just a data geek, really, capital growth data geek.
I love that. And it's important because the data that you put together can either help people make a really informed decision or turn, I guess, different deals away. So it makes it very, very concise so that they can take action on what they need to do to fit within the budget.
Oh, yeah, it's extremely important. You pay hundreds of dollars to find out about building and pest inspections before you buy a property. I mean, you wouldn't do without that. And I think just having a look at some of the data, those sort of reports, they're so cheap and they make such a difference to an investor's future with a property. It's sort of crucial kind of stuff. And it's so easy to become biased about particular suburbs. And looking at things numerically helps us avoid that sort of bias. So it's handy for a number of reasons.
In his role as a research director, what does he do in any given day?
There's a combination of things. So first of all, I spend a lot of my time doing product development. So I've got a couple of new products, new websites will be coming out in the next year or two. And there's obviously keeping existing websites running. And the key focus is to make sure that clients are fed the right property to invest in. Now, I don't actually pick any properties. I don't even go down to street level. But what I'm doing is supplying our buyers' agents with a list of suburbs that I recommend for a range of prices that suit their clients. And once a month, we meet together and I do a presentation. I say, here's what's happening in the market. Here's what's happening around the country. This is business as usual. This looks interesting. Here's something more to watch. And we should probably stop getting into this market and start getting into that market. So it's those sorts of things. And it's my analysis is really just all the numbers, the numerical stuff. So I don't do any field research, but the buyer's agents cover that side. So it's sort of a merger of fundamental research and technical research that we do once a month. And then they'll go off and pick locations that are a combination. They have a good numerical, good data background, and they also have something else that they're aware of that's going on that's good. And so it's sort of that intersection of fundamental research and technical research that we do each month.
While the majority of Shepherd's accumulated data is directly towards buyer's agents, there is a secondary website which was created for individuals who want to do the research themselves.
We often get people just wanting to know about locations, but my primary objective is to supply the buyer's agents with those suburbs and something that suits their clients. So I don't actually have a client-facing role. I just have a computer-facing role, a database-facing role. It is all about the number crunching. But it's possible. We kicked off this website around July of last year, Location Score, and that's for some of the investors who want to do it themselves. They don't want to hire a buyer's agent. And we can't service all of Australia, obviously, so we thought, well, let's give away some of the data. And that was the purpose of Location Score. They can do some quick, easy sort of research, not the sort of in-depth stuff that I do every month, but at least enough to avoid buying in a danger zone. You know, it'll flag warnings, trigger alarm bells, that sort of thing. So we do provide some of that data for the general public, but most of the nitty-gritty that I'm working on day-to-day is for the buyer's agents.
Initially growing up in the inner city of New South Wales, Shepherd has since moved to a different part of the country for work.
I grew up in Western Sydney. Worked a lot of my life in Western Sydney. I live in Melbourne now, almost all of my life I've lived in Western Sydney.
Oh, okay, that's an interesting change. So why move down to Melbourne?
Well, it was for this role as Director of Research for Empower Wealth that I couldn't really pass up that opportunity. The guys here had been looking around for someone who could help them open up new markets, and I was looking to link arms with a great investment team. So, it just seemed like the opportunity of a lifetime, really. I couldn't pass up. So I left family and friends behind and enjoying Melbourne, where every day is sunny and rainy. And actually, I don't mind the weather here. It's okay. You get to wear jackets a lot more often than in Sydney.
Living in both Mount Druitt and Parramatta, he completed his university education at UTS.
So I studied electrical engineering at the University of Technology in Sydney, and before I even finished that, I was getting jobs in IT, part-time sort of work, and this is prior to the dot-com crash, and so the money was pretty good in IT, and I never actually practiced as an engineer. I became a computer programmer and started doing contract work, and then thought, well, where am I going to put my ill-gotten gains? And I started investing in shares, actually. Until everything sort of came undone, and I realised I'm not a very good share investor. I really don't know which way share prices are heading, that's what got me into real estate. Actually, I was looking for some other investment vehicle.
That's a very interesting story. And I was about to ask you, how did you actually jump straight into electrical engineering into IT, which is, it's a left center kind of, area that you jumped into? Because, I mean, engineering is nowhere near computer programming.
I suppose it was electrical engineering / computer systems engineering. Towards the end of the degree, I chose more of the computer systems type of subjects, but it was a part-time course. So during the time that I was working, I just found it a lot easier to get jobs computer programming, and so the hardware side of things sort of faded, and the software side I excelled in, and there were so many more job opportunities. It just became easier to move in that direction. And once you've got that on your resume, of course, it's just a flow-on effect. You've got that momentum.
In terms of jobs Shepherd undertook after university, he did a lot of contract work from a macroeconomic perspective.
There was Department of Immigration, Commonwealth Superannuation. I did some work with Department of Infrastructure Planning and Natural Resources. So it was all contract work. So it might be only a 3-month contract, or it might be a 3-year contract. But always contract work. Java programming, website programming, bit of database, that sort of thing.
What led Shepherd to invest in property was the experience of watching his shares plummeting due to an incorrect prediction. Ultimately, he now prefers the tangibility of property investing.
So I barely knew what was going on from a a subject to domain sort of side of things. I was really just, I just had my head buried in the code. Yeah, and back then when I was doing all this contracting work, I was right into shares. I was thinking this is the best place to put my money, and it all came undone. Well, it was sort of a bit by bit thing, and then there was the 9/11 attacks, and I had a huge exposure to News Corp shares, and it's funny because weeks afterwards it was just 24/7 news. But I would have thought if any company's going to make any money out of a disaster like this, it would be a news company, but the shares plummeted. And this was the stereotypical thing for me with shares. So whatever was announced in the media, whatever came out, I just interpreted it somehow the wrong way. Someone knew something that I didn't know, and the shares just moved in the opposite direction to what I thought they'd logically move. And that's what I find so attractive about real estate. You just have to think like a human being that wants to live somewhere, and that's really easy. It's easy to think that way, and instead of competing against share investors, you're not really competing with anyone in real estate. You're just thinking like an investor, knowing that the dominant force in the market are just people who need a roof over their head at night.
From the computing side of things, he was recommended to attend an event which showed him the way to get into property and use it as an investment vehicle.
Things went pretty ugly shares-wise, but a friend of mine said, come along to a seminar, it's a freebie. This guy's talking about shares and real estate. And I thought, I'll ignore the real estate stuff, not into that. I'll just see what he's got to say about investing in shares. And it was actually about writing covered call options over contracts of shares, which I thought was kind of interesting. And but then when everything went pear-shaped, I remembered some of the content about real estate, and I thought about it again and wondered whether it would be better for me to give that a go. And it was 2002, I bought my first property, and I was planning to do a reno on it and just hang on to it. And I can remember asking some local real estate agents to come in and give me a market appraisal, and had a bit of a fist punching in the air moment where I just thought, yes, it works. This is it. And I went crazy property investing.
The rest is now history. However, there has been some trials along the way.
It's been a gradual process, but like there's been these penny dropping moments where I've realised, that's what I was looking for. That's why this is easier. That's why it makes sense. I didn't realise at the time. But I guess, I had some unfortunate moments with shares, and things have gone fortunate for me with real estate. Although that first property that I bought in 2002, I had tenants move in almost the next day after it settled. And they didn't pay a cent in rent, and it took me almost 6 months to get them out. They were so disgruntled that they lost their free accommodation that they blocked up the drains and left the taps running overnight to flood the house. And there was, I think it was something like $13,000 worth of damage. So my point is there were some really negative moments, but when it all came together, after the reno was complete, it was a really good feeling to know that I was in control. It was something like you said that I could see that's tangible, and I'm providing accommodation for someone. So yeah, it all felt good.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve further into Shepherd's property investing journey and find out more about the worst tenants ever and how he learnt from his mistakes.
That was the first lesson to be learned, that you're not just buying the property. If there's a tenant in it, you've got to research their history, their rental history as well.
Discover the breakthrough aha moment that changed the game for property investing for him.
I just wanted the right kind of market. And I thought, if this is all the data I knew, how would I interpret this metric, this indicator, this statistic, from a supply versus demand perspective and pick out the best market in the country to invest in?
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you looking at buying or investing in property? Like, what are the property hotspots, or how do I start my portfolio? Clever ways to renovate and how to make an extra $50,000? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts at the Property Buy Expo in Brisbane on the 26th to 27th of May. Use the promo code PI for a free 2-day pass valued at $50. For tickets and more information, visit the website at propertybuyexpo.com.au. Now back to the show. Shepherd learnt from his mistakes and the worst tenants ever, then went on to add more to his portfolio.
When I think back, those are the worst tenants I've ever had. I mean, I've bought 16 properties since then and never had as much drama as that first time. You know, you learn from your mistakes, and that's a good thing about real estate too, that you get these opportunities to learn. I had no idea what was happening with shares. I can remember National Australia Bank, this is years ago, they recorded a record profit, and I didn't have any shares at the time, but it was on the news after trading had stopped the prior day, and the next morning the share price came down, and that just made no sense at all to me. But I know that if you've got a house that's close to schools and shops and parks and it's a quiet street, people will want to live there, and that makes sense.
I totally agree, and that's a fascinating story. Just to clarify, with those tenants, were they before you did the renovation, or was that after you did the renovation that they trashed the place?
The guy that was selling the property, he had a couple of properties in the area, and these tenants were in another one of his properties, and he was self-managing. And I wanted vacant possession because I was going to do a reno. And he said, hey, look, I've got some tenants. Do you want them? They'll move in as soon as the property settles. And I said, oh, no, it's all right. I'm going to do a reno. But there's a granny flat at the back. And the granny flat was quite new. The house itself was quite old. I was just going to renovate the house. And that's what I wanted vacant possession of. So I thought, all right, we'll stick them in the granny flat. I'll get a little bit of income while the tradies are working, and that'll ease the pain of the renovation. But after a few weeks, the tradies just said, tools down, we're not doing any more work until you get rid of those tenants. They're stealing our equipment, they're knocking off tiles, and they just refused to do any more work. So then it was approach tenancy tribunal, and I more or less inherited nightmare tenants. And yeah, that was the first lesson to be learnt, that you're not just buying the property. If there's a tenant in it, you've got to research their history, their rental history as well. And so big lesson learnt there.
There have been many other mistakes he has made throughout his journey. However, he ensures he never makes one mistake more than 6 times.
I've made a lot of mistakes in real estate. I think that, the great thing about mistakes is if you've got the right attitude, you can learn from them. And so that first mistake I made was not researching the tenant. I've made other mistakes, like trying to renovate a property myself. The second property that I bought was only a stone's throw from the first one. And I thought, I'd pictured it like... I'd invite some friends over and they might help with the reno, and I'll put on a barbecue, and it'd be like a Coke commercial, where Esky flips open, you've got ice and it was nothing like that. Nobody turned up, and I was there at like 9 o'clock at night in the dark, just sanding. And that was terribly draining. And I realised tradies know what they're doing. They're working on this full time. They do it 9 to 5. They've got all the equipment. They do a better job than me. They'll do it quicker than me. And it's a lot like working a second job when you do the do-it-yourself kind of reno. And I decided after that second reno that that's the last time I'm ever going to do a reno myself. I said the same thing after the third one and the fourth one too. So I pride myself on never making the same mistake more than about half a dozen times.
By far, his worst mistake was taking his eye off the ball when investing into particular markets.
But probably I would say my worst mistake is taking my eye off a property market that I've invested in. I might have picked a really good location for that period of time, and I've picked some regional markets. This doesn't really happen so much in the city markets, but you can easily pick a regional market which is booming and have some fantastic capital growth, but it will quite often correct. It'll come back a long way. And I've bought in regional markets in Queensland and even in New Zealand where they've had some spectacular capital growth. I've picked the right time into the market. And then it was drummed into me when I was reading the books, going to the seminars, learning all I could about property investing, that you buy and never sell. And I believe that's a mistake, that you should always be prepared to sell if the circumstance presents itself. And I had bought in some markets. I waited until I got some good capital growth and I borrowed against that equity and bought elsewhere. So my eyes are on the next market, the next boom location. And I'm sort of doing this leapfrog to just create more and more equity. But when you take your eye off those markets and they do correct, you could end up with some negative equity. And that's exactly what happened. And when the GFC hit, I had properties that were owned in the name of a trust. I was a contractor and I was sourcing finance from non-bank lenders. And everyone got scared about providing credit. So the non-bank lenders that I had, their interest rates actually went up. When all the banks here in Australia were dropping rates because we're in an economic crisis, one of my loans went up to about almost 12%, 11.85%, I remember. And so obviously you want to refinance, but everyone's lending policies have become just so much tighter. And I've got properties that are interest only in the name of a trust and I'm a contractor. So nobody wanted to touch me. And yet my interest rates are going up and yet prices have come back.
Shepherd then had no choice but to sell.
I had no option but to sell down a significant portion of the portfolio. And that's when I realised, well, where are prices at? Oh dear, they've come back and I've had to sell for a loss. So, yeah, probably the worst mistake I have made is taking that advice of buy and never sell and then taking my eyes off the market. Now, some people could argue the case that if I'd just bought in cities, that wouldn't have been a problem. But, I mean, Perth's a city. It's the fourth biggest significant urban area in Australia. And yet if you had bought in Perth around 2014/15, you would have had probably some negative equity because of the downturn in the resources. So you can still lose money. There's still markets that can become oversupplied. There's still corrections that can occur. And I think every investor just needs to keep an eye on the property market they're exposed to and be prepared to let go. That's probably my biggest mistake, locking in a tremendous amount of negative equity.
However, despite the tribulations he has experienced throughout his journey, he has also had some highs where everything seemed to click into place for him, such as how to create the wow factor via renovating.
Yeah, I've had a few aha moments. One of them, early on when I was into renovating, it was just that you're trying to target a property where everywhere you look, there's something that's not quite right. And it just looks ugly. It looks old. It looks worn down. And the sum of all those things makes it look like a terrible property. But if you technically look at each one individually and add up the cost and then try and picture the property where everywhere you look, there's some wow factor. It's the effect of synergy. You know, synergy works for you when you're trying to find a renovator, and it works for you when you're flipping or selling or revaluing. in that everywhere you look, there's a wow factor. And the actual technical cost of each, there's a discrepancy there. So that was like an aha moment when I was renovating. I'm looking for something that it just, it biases me to make me feel like this property is a dog box. But honestly, if you look at it from a numerical perspective of how much it would cost to renovate, it's not that bad. And then, of course, after you've renovated and you've got some, you know, everything's shiny and new, someone walks in and they go, oh, wow, this is really nice. And then they've got the bias where they're feeling like this property is actually worth more than what it really is.
But the most breakthrough moment came when Shepherd realised he needed to find a market where the demand exceeds the supply, inspiring his game-changing algorithm.
What I'm into now is more capital growth thing. You know, when you start off as an investor, you're trying to force the issue. You're not experienced at picking growth markets. You don't know what to look for. And so a renovation is an excellent way to sort of force the issue along, because things are in your control and you can, it's like working a second job. Later, sooner or later, it's not worth your time. But the second aha moment was doing my research, trying to find these growth locations. I realised what I'm after is a market where demand exceeds supply. And it was, how can I identify easily a market where demand exceeds supply? And you've got things like high auction clearance rates. Obviously, when auctions are going great, there's always a sale, then that's a case of demand exceeding supply. If properties are snapped up really quickly, that means demand's exceeding supply. If vacancy rates are low, that means demand's exceeding. And so I started looking at, in the back of these magazines, at all this data that they'd have on every suburb. And I didn't have a fear of investing interstate. That didn't bother me at all. I just wanted the right kind of market. And I thought, if this is all the data I knew, how would I interpret this metric, this indicator, this statistic from a supply versus demand perspective and pick out the best market in the country to invest in? And that's when I put my programming skills to work and wrote this algorithm to acquire all this data and piece it all together and come up with this demand to supply ratio, and that would identify markets that have the most potential for capital growth. And I guess it was just, yeah, that aha moment was, it's all about supply and demand. Everything, jobs, population, they all affect those two things, supply and demand. If you can interpret a market based on supply and demand, then you know where the future growth is going to be.
With hundreds of data sources available, merging his knowledge of property and computer programming has allowed him to overcome challenges along the way.
There's a lot of challenges with it. I mean, there's been some data sources that I've acquired and then had a close look and realised, well, this really isn't telling the story that I thought it would. So sometimes we can get a bit misled that way. I guess it's a case of picturing people in a market and what they're after and what they really want, and then how that would affect a particular metric, a particular piece of data that someone's recording somewhere. It might be just turning up to open inspections and noticing that there's a lot of couples here. Or it might be, you know, actual auction clearance rates reported by some data source or some demographics from the ABS. But yeah, I think it comes down to trying to interpret as accurately as possible what each metric is telling you.
So, inspired by Shepherd's journey, we'll continue the conversation in a future episode of Property Investory, where we'll talk about the nuts and bolts of his strategy.
It really is capital growth. That to me is the bee's knees of property investing. It's so easy if you get it right. Like, all you have to do is get your research right, and there's no backbreaking labour.
What Shepherd is excited about in his plans for the next 5 years?
The thing I'm most excited about is the products that we'll release either later this year or early next year. I think they're going to be game changers, and they're along the same lines of location score, but just tenfold bigger.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to receive your free case studies. Thanks for listening.